The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and may not necessarily be the views or opinions of this station, its management, sponsors, or staff. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
Well, we begin with different perspectives on Black History Month with not just black people, but white people. As we talk about white privilege and other broader themes, we welcome Reverend Phil Blackwell, lead pastor at First United Methodist Church on Wisconsin Avenue in Madison. You'll be interim pastor until
June. The end of June, yeah.
I wouldn't say pastor. Not going to be put out to pasture at any point. But very impressive resume. Undergraduate degree from UW-Madison, English. Master of Divinity degree from Yale Divinity School. Doctor of Ministry degree from the Divinity School of the University of Chicago. Well, you've been around the block a few times. And your recent sermon, The Conceit of Privilege, and of course we have a blue booklet, Of One Blood, which you put together with John Odom, who's an African-American civil rights leader and educator. And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yes, we're talking about white privilege, a term that's been bandied about in this market for a long time. Ed Hughes of the school board, progressive white member, used that. He said we were wallowing in white privilege. And you were saying you were from Danville, Illinois as a child.
Yeah, I was born in Danville, 1943, and lived there for 8 years. And then my dad, who worked for Sherwin-Williams Paint Company, was moved to Milwaukee, so we lived in Menominee Falls. And eventually I came to Madison for the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you said as a child you would observe segregation at a young age.
Well, of course, I didn't know what I was looking at that age, but one of the first memories I have of Danville was that I went to the Clyde Beatty Circus at the Armory in Danville, and all of the families sitting on the floor level were white. And in the balcony all around, I looked and I didn't know what I was looking at because I had never seen a black person before, but the whole balcony was filled with children.
Upper balcony.
And so I saw that. It took me a couple of years to figure out what I was looking at. A couple of years ago, I went back to Danville, and the door to the Armory was open. So I walked in for a rather tough, nostalgic moment, and looked up and saw that the balcony was only about 8 or 9 feet off the ground. And I could almost reach it, which was to say that the actual distance between where I was sitting and where the black kids were sitting was inconsequential, but in the social moment, it was all the distance in the world.
Yes, I think that's very. Now, you were saying that with white privilege, the term, you can experience it and not know it.
Well, we're the last ones as white people to see it. And there are other people who have been very vocal and sometimes eloquent in pointing it out. But it's if for us as white Americans, privilege is normal, then it's hard to see it until somebody outside points it out. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking with a black woman pastor from the Woodlawn neighborhood in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And she said that the local alderman there had made a contract with the University of Chicago Police Department that they could come into the neighborhood and do some policing there, even though it's not part of the campus. So it's the Chicago Police and the University Police. Uh-huh. And since the University Police have started, she's been stopped 5 times by police while she's driving through the neighborhood. And she lives there, and she works there. Now that I know, I'll never be stopped just by driving through a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But this is a persistent experience. But if we don't sit at the same table and have somebody tell us that.
Even acknowledge that part of it, which I can't sometimes get that even concession from certain people. on the air. And then people say, well, I got stopped once when I was 18, and I, you know, and I go, no, it's not the same thing.
No, no.
But people don't want to say it's not the same thing.
Well, I'm being taught through all of this. This is not it's not really a political opinion or anything other than my observation years is that my eyes have been opened up to the privileges I've had as a white person, the privileges I've had as a male, the privileges I've had as somebody with education and degrees.
Right, your status.
That's big in Madison.
A lot of status anxiety out there, yeah.
And there are all sorts of privileges that people experience. Privilege of location. We talk about the manifest destiny of the United States as if living in the United States is somehow favored by God. You know, that this is the best.
James Polk. Mm-hmm. Manifest destiny.
So I think human beings experience privilege. There are all sorts of pecking orders everywhere. But when we come to talk about what is the racial dynamic in our country, white privilege is a given that is so normal for those of us who experience it that we don't see it until it's
pointed out. If you're on the receiving end, you're in great shape. Well, in the Bakke case in the late 70s, you had somebody who didn't get a job because he was white, and there was and so then people got upset. They started to get upset, but you know, there was a lot of that going on the other side of it for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I would think that in my life, I've been a United Methodist minister for 45 years, most of it in Northern Illinois because that was my conference area, and I'm in Madison to work with this church through the end of June. And it's good to be back home in Madison and kind of be reunited with the university and the locale.
Uh-huh.
But there's a sense in which I have lived some privilege, but the church has opened up to me a bigger world than I think if I'd been a lawyer or an accountant or a banker, because I ended up in the last 45 years of having colleagues who are not white, Latino, Asian, black, male, female, gay, straight, and my world has gotten bigger because of the church. And I have been the beneficiary of being re-educated. Now, it's also true there have been times, I think, where I haven't had access to certain roles in the life of the church because I'm a white male. You know, if the church needs somebody other than a white male to be considered for bishop, that's overall a good thing for the church. And I am not then going to be in the running, though on the other hand, I don't particularly wanted to be a bishop. I just wanted to be called bishop. But I didn't want to do the work. So, so there are ways in which, yes, as white male make certain concessions, but the trade-off is really still into my
larger
benefit.
It gets us ultimately to perhaps a bigger pool, or as Nelson Mandela said, the goal of non-racial society, which of course we're not in yet.
Not yet.
But his goal was to have a non-racial society, a colorblind society, which, you know, it's not a bad goal to have.
No, though I think even in some of our discussion that we're going to start at the First United Methodist Church tonight in this five-part study that we're calling Of One Blood, which is from Acts in the New Testament, is that we're not really looking for colorblind. We're looking for actually seeing each other in the multitude of colors and genders and cultures.
Where it doesn't matter. I mean, eventually it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when President Obama was elected, people say, okay, we're past that.
No.
Well, we're not past that, but then...
Right, I understand what you mean. I mean, I'll try to explain my words as well as we go. Hmm. But stay here. You're a fascinating guy and a lot of big topics here. And your calls as well, Of One Blood. And the conceit of privilege of conceit.
It goes either way.
Either way, it's fine. And this is The Mitch Hink Show.
Welcome back to The Mitch Hink Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hink Show.
And the Reverend Phil Blackwell, lead pastor at First United Methodist Church in Wisconsin Avenue, Madison. And the conceit of privilege was the sermon, but this little work that John Odom in the church had put together, the First United Methodist Church educational series on race, religion, and racism, mm-hmm. of One Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean? Explain that in your words.
Okay. Well, the Of One Blood is a biblical reference that the creation did not distinguish among races. We're all of one blood.
Mm-hmm.
I have an acquaintance who's an anthropologist at the University of Chicago, Russ Tuttle. Got to know him when he sang in the choir of the church where I was working. And Russ has just written a 1,036-page book on apes and evolution that he gave me a copy. Glad he didn't give me a test on it yet. But in our conversation, he made it clear that race is not a scientific marker. It's not clearly a genetic marker between blacks and whites or Latinos and Asians. It's a social construct. And so that when we talk about race, we're talking about something that has to do with the way we experience life and one another. We're not talking about blood types and things that are absolutely definitive. So we need to know that when we talk about race in our culture, we're talking about ourselves and how we construct our life together. We're not talking about some kind of objective scientific item. So that's one of the things we want to talk about at the church. And one of the things about any place, including Madison, is where do people with different experiences sit in a safe place and share those experiences? There's so little contact.
People are afraid to talk, aren't they?
Well, it's dangerous to talk, or it's uncomfortable to talk, or you've already told you this and you're not listening.
Right.
Talk. And it's interesting that when I look at the proliferation now of public media, social media, radio stations, it used to be in the old days, if you had a TV, there were three networks and you would watch the evening news. Now you can turn on any news anytime. And my hunch is that
on your phone.
Well, if you could sit down and turn on the news, if you aren't careful. And what I think might be the case is we're becoming more ghettoized the more news sources we have, because now we can listen to those people that we only agree with. If you're listening to Walter Cronkite in the old days, you didn't have any real control over what the news was going to be or how it was going to be presented.
Yeah.
But now we can, we can listen to you. We can listen to the other folks. We can pick and choose.
Right.
I listen to a couple of the stations. I'm trying to find good radio stations around Madison and Milwaukee, and so many of them are driven by what I think of as outrage for profit.
Yes.
You know, they're really not trying to get across a point. They're trying to get people angry so they'll send in money so they can stay on the air. And I think, okay, I don't need that.
But it does happen, Reverend. You're quite right to point that out. Shocking as it is. Yeah. but we got so much ground to cover, but let's go to the phones. 210-1667, 210-1667. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk for a minute about white privilege and the meaning of it. I don't have any quarrel with any of the reality of the phenomena that Reverend Blackwell was referring to. But in my experience, the calling it white, quote, privilege, close quote, is part of the problem in getting a lot of people to see it and understand it, white people at least.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, take that story you just told of the Chicago woman who was stopped when she was driving her own car in her own neighborhood by the police.
Mm-hmm.
The right to drive your own car in your own neighborhood without being stopped by the police is not, in my book, a privilege for anyone. That is a basic right that we all deserve, to be able to drive our own car in our own neighborhood. Calling something a privilege, you're saying it's a special right. I mean, that's the dictionary definition, a special right extended to some people. And we want to keep in mind the idea that we are not asking for any kind of special rights for black people or minorities when we're asking that they be allowed to drive in their own neighborhood in their own cars without being stopped.
No, that's correct.
That is not a special right. I mean, is there any way around this? I mean, I know the term privilege, white privilege, is kind of embedded now, and you can't substitute something else for it. But it's a real stopper when you're trying to get white folks to understand. Mm-hmm. I'll take the answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. No, I think your distinctions are valid. Privilege is a loaded word, but those who are using it to provoke a sense of breaking out of what is often our norm. That is, we just assume certain things, and so privilege is, it's a word that I know pushes buttons for folks.
Well, you know why. Obviously, she doesn't want to have to, earn the right not to be stopped.
Yeah, well,
but you said, well, because I'm not stopped, we should understand that I'm not stopped and somebody else is five times.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't earn the right not to be stopped.
Not to be stopped.
I've had some black clergy colleagues who have told me what they have had to tell their children growing up, particularly their male children, how to act in public, particularly if they're stopped by the police.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I've never had to tell our kids that because it was just assumed. I didn't even think about it. It was not a problem of how our children growing up in a white suburb in Chicago would be treated as they went to school and as they went off to the soccer practice. For somebody to confide in me, this is what we've had to tell our son, is for me a wake-up call.
It's eye-opening for you.
Yeah.
Education.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, okay, I have been... I have been privileged by the society in that I've not been called in on some of the things other people have been, where the assumption that somehow I'm suspicious until proven otherwise.
Well, because, again, another anecdote, and the underpinning for some of this is attitudes and mm-hmm. certain crime statistics in certain parts of the country that drive attitudes and stereotypes. But when my friend was at the Bucks basketball game with like eight of his buddies from the office, they all had ties and mm-hmm. shirts, and the only person asked by the usher for his ticket to see his ticket was my friend who's black in the office. Now, people just get so upset when they hear the, well, I'm sure there was a misunderstanding. No, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tiger Woods in 1995 at Stanford was warming up for a match, and somebody said, what are you doing on the range?
Yeah, right.
Come on.
Yeah.
That happened. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. 1995.
Well, when I was a minister in a church in Wilmette, which is a northern suburb of Chicago.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And a very nice
some
place.
Money there.
Well, it's where Home Alone was filmed and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a black friend with me at the parsonage, the church house. We're talking over some program. In the meantime, outside the house, there were landscapers who were digging up shrubs and planting new things. So Don and I walk out the front door, and the man from the church, who's the chair of the trustees, looks up, and he says to Don, a black man, okay, now we need that shrub from over there to be taken over to the far corner,
sure, yeah.
And please, take that to the truck. And I'm thinking, my God, I've never...
You've never witnessed that?
No. No, and for Don, it's the way he's treated all the time.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I've now seen something that I've been privileged to see.
Right.
Using the term in a different way.
We'll come back in your calls as well with the Reverend Phil Blackwell, and this is The Mitch Hanks Show.
Welcome to The Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
Your calls are welcome. Talking to Reverend Phil Blackwell. Interim lead pastor at First United Methodist Church on Wisconsin Avenue in Madison, talking about the conceit of privilege, white privilege. Mm-hmm. Also, you've got the Race to Equity report from 2014 about the achievement gap in Dade County, in education, also in economics.
Yeah, the Race to Equity report is really an eye-opener for those of us who've been out of Madison for a while and now come back in. And it... shows that the gap is as bad in Madison as anywhere else in the country, even worse in some cases. And it also shows that the poverty gap is mirroring the education gap and the unemployment gap. Now, I don't know how many people or what the job distribution is at Oscar Mayer that's going to be closing, but there are going to be thousands of people not working who were working. That has a ripple effect all the way down through the city and into secure housing and into what educational opportunities kids have. We at the church sometimes will have children who we know are not having, they don't have a permanent residence. They're either with their parents at the YWCA or they're staying with relatives or something. Now, this is not simply racial. This has to do with poverty and unemployment, but a lot of that has some racial demarcations, and that's what the race equity was pointing out, that if you go white and black, you'll see some real distinction. One of our concerns, and John Odom, our colleague and working on this, who's an educator, is how do we help particularly black children in the Madison public school system have the kind of support and encouragement that they need from the very beginning, not just when they're in eighth grade, so that's really important time, but when they're 4 and 5 years old. Now, there are a lot of people in Madison who've been doing this. There are some efforts that have been going on for 20 years that have been notable. But even after 20 years, the Race Equity Report says that the gap is not closing. It may take two more centuries to close at the rate that it's going now. Well, we don't have two more centuries. So for us at the church, the issue is, since the tagline for the congregation is downtown for good, because it decided 30 years ago to stay downtown and not move to the suburbs, who is downtown and what good can we do? Well, we have a number of answers to it, but one of the answers is, let's work with children in the public schools and with teachers and with administrators. Not because we're going to turn the thing around, but because if we are really authentic in our calling as people of faith, we got to do something. We can't just talk about it. We can't just complain or read reports. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of reports in Madison. We're well studied in Madison. What are you going to do to make a difference? And so that's the kind of question we constantly are asking, and certainly Bethel Lutheran, they're asking it, and Grace Episcopal are asking it. A lot of religious groups.
Yes, and you're hands-on trying to help and find solutions. On the far right, it's all about individual responsibility and no God and no Father and all that. On the left, the factory closed 10 years ago and gutted the family and so forth. But is there not some sort of middle ground universal trend that describes the mass performance?
Well, that's what we're hoping to find. I mean, there is, yes, but there's certainly individual responsibility and parental responsibility and family responsibility and communal responsibility. In some cases, a religious congregation might be the family for some of these children who provide to the children what they need. But there's also a concern about economic development and what constitutes a healthy economy in a region, whether it's Madison or Dane County. To assume that there's one answer to any of this is to just not be paying attention.
But people do tune out, though, if they get an answer they don't like.
Yeah, or they get one they do like.
Or they'll just tune in and nod, but,
No, life is more complex than we first thought.
Yes.
And one of the things that you do and the church does and other people, I hope, do is try to create a context where that complexity can be honestly portrayed, discussed, and addressed.
I think that's fantastic. There is a lot of anger out there in the country, and there's people that don't want to buy into certain rules or standards or aspirations that someone else might have for them. And so isn't the trick to try to get people to be on the same page?
There are certain essentials that people probably can agree on independent of circumstance or race or income, like food.
Right. Safe place to be. We want food. Yeah, there's one right there.
We want food. And at the church this morning, there are about 100 people having breakfast, and that can be pointed out at a lot of other places around the town. A safe place to stay. And a job. I remember talking with some people who were essentially homeless in downtown Chicago, where I was minister for a while, and we had a meal program. And I asked the 100 guys sitting there what it is that they most wanted, and I was thinking big time, and I was going to walk across to the city hall and give them city hall what the invisible, you know, voiceless people. And they said, we really want a place to take a shower and wash our clothes. They were aware of the very basic needs that they weren't getting, because there's no public toilet in downtown Chicago. There's no place, there's no laundromat. There's no shower, and the people were aware that they were not welcome, in part for just the very basic needs. So, yeah, people can talk about major programs, but what are those essentials to every human being of every circumstance?
A shower and something to eat and, you know, change your clothes.
And somebody to care for you, and yeah. So it a lot of what some of the religious groups in the city center are doing are trying to provide at least the basics. What interested me in hearing from the mayor of the city was that he was complaining about the churches feeding people who are hungry, because he said that attracts
more,
people downtown.
More will come, yeah.
Yeah, well.
Well, you have a debate here, big time. Mm-hmm. You're talking about our mayor.
I'm talking about Mayor of Madison, yeah.
Yeah, Mayor Sondland.
Yeah, and I say, well, that's probably not a good analysis. That's an understandable lamentation, you know, because this is not the way we want to run a city. But until there's some place where somebody can get something to eat or a safe place to stay, I mean, one of the things that our church is going to be doing starting April 1st is being an overflow site for the YWCA for homeless children and their parents, because that's a need that's invisible. We all think we know who's down and out because we see it on the square. What you don't see are the much larger group of people who are in desperate need and aren't getting the kind of attention even from the social service agencies.
So where do they go? If they don't go to where others are going, where do they go?
Well, some of them go out into the parks, the open air. Some go to relatives if there's a couch in the front room. We had people sleeping on the doorstep of the church last year, 3-month-old, 6-year-old, and we say, okay, that's not satisfactory. We've got to get inside, and we've got to change the town.
And we're talking to Reverend Phil Blackwell, and your calls as well on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, in the quest to lose 100 pounds, we're down 44 total, because 30 in the first reduction, 14 in the second reduction. I was well over 290 when I started. The goal is to lose 100, and you can do it too. You might want to lose 20 or 200, who knows. Plan Z by Zola is that ability to do that, because it recognizes you need a plan. And it's a plan that enjoys your own ability to get food from the store. Nothing comes in a box, no shakes. You kill the craves, which craves can get you, chips and cookies and all that stuff. ZR50 reduction formula is not a drug or a hormone. It's a natural formula which helps you with the discomfort of dieting and the cravings. And you then make up to 900 recipes all there for you. Easy, fast. You can do fast, easy stuff as you go through the store and do it and put it together. Or you can do some more elaborate stuff. It's all there, you know. Meatloaf, or you can do steaks, fish stuff, everything you want to do, seasonings, have leftovers. So watch the video, learn about it. You can buddy up with a family member like I did with my daughter and get more of a discount on the deal. But you must go to planzdiet.com. That's planzdiet.com. Back here with Reverend Phil Blackwell. A lot of things to deal with there. 210-1667, 210-1667. But finishing the homelessness argument, mm-hmm. where people say, well, we're just going to be attract more. Mm-hmm. And can't you get this person off the step, or yeah. whatever the case may be? And to that, you would say?
Well, let's move them off one step, and you kick the can down the street, and they end up at another step. There's got to be a viable alternative for that person. And if there isn't, then shuffling them down the road is not going to solve any problem.
Just kicking the can.
Yeah. And so, again, there are social agencies and not-for-profits and religious organizations that are trying to create a conversation with enough of the right people at the table that there are some, you know, day shelters, some wet shelters where somebody who is intoxicated can go and be helped rather than having to be clean before they go. When we're talking numbers in Madison, we're not talking astronomical numbers. We're talking about numbers that can actually be counted. But it seems as if the sum is less than the parts. Everybody's trying to do something, but it doesn't add up to be
different directions.
So. Yeah.
You make a great point about kicking the can down the road, because I've heard people say, well, just get a bus. Put them on a bus. Bus to where?
Yeah, Fitchburg. I don't know.
Seattle.
But the issue about, and we're talking about white privilege and mainly the way that we define ourselves socially, it's not just black and white, though, with our whole history of slavery and Jim Crow and all, we have a unique story around black and white. But tomorrow there's going to be a gathering here in Madison of Latinos from around the state visiting their congressional representatives in the Capitol building. And our church is helping just to facilitate that in terms of being a place for people to gather and for children to be in child care and all.
The day is called?
A Day Without Latinos.
Meaning, where would we be without Latinos?
Yeah. It's a lot of Latino workers in our culture are invisible.
In the kitchen?
Yeah. So we don't see them until they're not there. Or we don't miss them until they're not there. The whole area around immigration, which is, you know, big political flag these days, I've worked with people from other countries, many other countries, but have listened to their horror stories of trying to make it through the immigration process. Some who have been working for 20 years to try and qualify, and the system doesn't work. They're working, they're paying taxes, they're contributing to the general good of the population, but they cannot make it through the front door because the door is locked in many ways. And one of my experiences, again, I spent some time working in a church on Daly Plaza in Chicago where there was a fire in the county building next door to our church about 6 or 7 years ago. And six people were killed, five of them county workers, one of them a Polish woman who was on the cleaning crew of a company that does that building. When the county had its memorial service at a theater nearby, they held it for the five workers from the county. They did not include the woman who was killed who was from the cleaning crew. I don't know why, but she did not compute when it came to how they were going to memorialize this. So
we got that.
Well, with the church being next door at 10 o'clock at night, since we had the same cleaning company, we had a impromptu memorial service for the woman who died, and we had about 100 people there, all of them on the second shift, the ones who do the work, who make it possible for you to do your work on the first shift. Uh-huh. And some of it was in Polish, some of it was in Spanish, some of it was in English. We had no chance to really translate to each other, and yet everybody knew what people were saying because it was in memory of this one woman. Well, she was invisible to the county. I mean, what an oversight.
More ways than one, yeah.
Yeah, and say, okay, that's part of that. How do we lift people into a visible realm where they're appreciated for what they do and not simply vilified for something.
You want to see, you want us to see each other, actually see one another.
I one time walked past a homeless guy sitting in a doorway of a downtown building. I was on my way to a train station after work, and he was sitting there saying, he had a sign. It was a white man with a sign that said, "If you can't help me, at least look at me."
How about that, huh?
That's a life changer just to see the sign.
I mean, how deep is that? Yeah. If you can't help me, just look at least look at me. Mm-hmm. I do exist. I do matter. Mm-hmm. What my mother would tell me, the crudest thing you can do to someone is ignore them.
Yeah.
Rings true, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's part of this whole privilege notion of who's seen and who's not seen, who's heard, who's not heard, and where can we provide a common table where everybody is seen and heard?
Reverend Phil Blackwell, you've been fantastic. We still have another short segment. Don't run away, but appreciate it very much. On the Mitch Hank Show.
You're listening to the Mitch Hank Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hank.
Reverend Phil Blackwell, so more in the series, the sermons coming up?
It's not so much a series based on these issues, though we will be mindful both of this being February, Black History Month, but also that being Lent in the Christian calendar, which is an emphasis on introspection and repentance in the simplest sense. So that means of turning around, sort of turning away from one thing and toward another. And so it's a kind of gut check season for the church. And one of the ideas is that when we look at stories of creation as they're told in the Bible, race doesn't enter in. I mean, God, by the story, created all people. Not just these people first, then these people, then these people, and then these were left over. So there's a common dignity that is afforded all people because of the biblical story.
So the conceit of privilege is not part of the plan.
No.
Not part of the plan at all. Now, and for my conservative listeners, you're not saying people shouldn't be accountable and striving for so forth, but you're just saying we should not be arrogant, blind people.
We need to have our eyes open, our ears unstopped, but also we can't be we can't cave in to slovenliness as we would portray it, and part of it is to call children and their parents and their teachers and their pastors to a certain level of accountability. But that's usually done by positive reinforcement of saying to a child that you can do it, rather than giving a child a message from age 4 or 5 that you're a second-class citizen and you're going to be in this classroom and these other kids are going to be over there.
Yeah. Leave me.
Yeah. So this is a matter of affirmation and reinforcement and, from our perspective, a religious truth that all people are created equal.
Thank you, Reverend. I appreciate the time. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
And we thank also for the space here in West Wash, Bob Keller, the Keller Real Estate Group, 4 blocks west of the Capitol. He has space to check out downtown, also on the west side for seniors. You go to KellerRealEstateGroup.com. That's KellerRealEstateGroup.com. The Reverend's interview will be there 24/7 on our podcast on MitchHank.com, designed by Mark Schmitz of Zebra Dog. We thank Bob and Bella, and we'll see you tomorrow.